It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll hear about new fish consumption guidelines for fish caught in Wisconsin lakes and rivers.
First, on August 19th, journalist James Foley was beheaded in a video released by the terrorist group ISIS. In the aftermath, Foley's family made statements about his enduring belief in the mission of journalism despite its risks.
Our next guest covered Syria when James Foley was there in 2012. One day, he and a few fellow journalists were kidnapped when their car was taken over by masked gunmen. He was released later that day, but since then he started weighing the risks journalists take in war zones against the benefits and decided it isn't worth it.
Tom A. Peter joins us now. He reported from the Middle East and Afghanistan for 7 years, working mostly for the Christian Science Monitor. He currently covers immigration and issues along America's border with Mexico today. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start with the day that you were kidnapped. You were covering the Arab Spring in 2012. What happened?
Yeah, so this was, I'd been covering Syria since the summer of 2012, and this was in November. And, at that time, you could really kind of move around, and the opposition was still largely moderate. I was with a group of reporters, and we'd wanted to go see an area that was recently captured by the opposition. We went and, did our reporting and we're headed back and just kind of out of nowhere, a car kind of spun in front of us and screeched to a halt and masked gunmen hopped out and had guns drawn. And, at the time, initially I thought they were just going to kind of kill us there in the streets. That had happened to a Japanese journalist a few months before. And when it became clear they weren't going to do that, they pulled our driver out of the car and then one of their people got in and kind of drove off with us. And, at that point, you kind of just think, okay, well, they're going to take us somewhere and make a video and execute us, or best case scenario, we're held indefinitely. And it's really just an indescribably devastating feeling, when something like that happens to you. But fortunately for us, they held us for several very tense hours and then, decided to let us go, saying that it had been what they called a misunderstanding and kind of a surreal moment. They took us to a little roadside espresso stand and bought us drinks and then dropped us off in the middle of town. So, I and my colleagues who were with me that day were very fortunate that the outcome for us was very different than it has been for several other colleagues.
It had a good ending for you, but on the other hand, there were some moments of real terror there. Was that the defining moment when you realized, I don't really want my life to end like this?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that had factored in. I kept going in to Syria until May, at which point it was clear that it was too dangerous and the situation had changed quite a bit. So it was no longer safe, in my opinion, and the opinion of many of the friends I had who'd been covering it for a long time, that we didn't think it was a great idea to be going back in. So, but then I did stay in the Middle East and I was covering unrest. I was covering the protest in Istanbul, which, wasn't, exactly too crazy, but, there's still a risk there. But I would say for me, the defining point came when I returned to the U.S. and really started talking to people about how they were engaging with the product that, that I was taking very serious risks to produce. And it exposed me to the sad reality that it's maybe not as I would have imagined being back overseas.
What kinds of things do people say to you about how they were, processing this journalism that you were putting out at great personal risk?
Well, I described in a recent article for the New Republic that kind of the first experience I had was about a month after I had that kind of short abduction experience in Aleppo. I was back visiting my family. My father is kind of making the long, slow process of retiring in Florida. So, it's in that kind of holiday scrum where you're visiting all sorts of random people. And, I met this one woman. I'd never met her before. She's kind of an obscure connection to the family. And the first thing she asked me when she found out that I was a journalist was that, is your reporting truthful? And it really took me aback. I mean, on one level, it's just a rude remark. If you met a mechanic, you wouldn't say, well, do you cheat your customers and lie to them? Because that's the reputation mechanics have. But then on another level, you just kind of think, well, what exactly do you think journalists do? It would be one thing if it was just an isolated opinion. People think all kinds of crazy things, but it's an attitude that I've just encountered again and again as I talk to more and more people back here in the U.S.
Well, journalism, you know, has been considered one of the glamour professions. It draws a lot of people in based on the excitement, the potential influence and platform. Do you think that's really changing now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's majorly changing. I wrote an article that's actually out today talking about this issue. This was also in the New Republic. But just there's the one side of freelancing that it's a dangerous job if you're doing it in war zones. You're going to be exposed to, war, which, you know, gun battles, violence, all that stuff. You're going to see things that will potentially traumatize you. You know, I've seen more dead bodies than I can count, and people who died in terrible ways that you get up close. So, you know, if you're going into cover a bombing, oftentimes you get in close where you're stepping through body parts if you get there early. So it's things that are difficult to process. And through that all, you're getting paid really, really poorly. And oftentimes having to pay the lion's share of your expenses. So for 2.5 years that I was in Afghanistan, I was on contract. So it means, you know, basically I was treated like I was staff, but I didn't have the same benefits or pay as staff. And during that time, I had to pay about $30,000 out of pocket just for basic expenses that, traditionally would have been covered by, news organizations. So, that meant that to do that job, I was probably making about the same as, a janitor would back in the U.S. So, aside from it being dangerous, just from a kind of a working and labor standpoint, it can be kind of a crummy job sometimes.
Well, as we all know, recently James Foley was beheaded on a video sent from ISIS. Now Stephen Stotloff was beheaded as well. And it's one of the things that has emerged after that, especially with James Foley, especially, is the statements from his family saying that he died doing what he believed in most, that he saw this as sort of journalism, as a higher purpose, a higher mission, and it's what kept him going. And they really pointed to sort of the nobility of journalism. Is that enough, do you think, to offset the risks that people like yourself are taking to cover these battles, these wars?
Well, I guess going back to what I was saying earlier, about kind of engaging with people in the U.S., I think one of the things I've really struggled with is that for journalism to be a noble cause, there has to be, it's a two-way street. You can't just say, I want to go out and provide people information about these major world events that are happening. You need to have consumers of news who want to hear that and who are going to be engaged in the way that anyone who's civic-minded should be or is. And what I find is that we've kind of entered this place where things are so hyper-partisan that I just frequently will encounter people who have very strong opinions about the news. And when I talk to them about these opinions they have, they usually aren't based on a careful reading of the news and really engaging with it and thinking about it. Oftentimes they're not reading it. They just get headlines or snippets that they hear, when they walk past the TV playing CNN or something. And then they make these kind of immovable opinions. So, that can be incredibly frustrating to deal with. It draws into question about why are journalists doing what they do, not just in war zones, but, around the U.S. where it is a fun job, and I can't say enough how much I love doing it. And, I don't have any intentions to stop, but, most people, to be a journalist, you have to be a reasonably sharp person. Presumably, you could go to law school or business school. You could do any number of other things. So it is a choice to do the job, and it doesn't pay too well, so and there's a lot of other sacrifices that come with it. So I don't know. I don't know how much a noble of a job it is if people aren't going to actually read the stories that we oftentimes risk our lives to put out there, and yet they'll also develop really strong opinions that can be quite toxic in the public discourse.
We're talking right now with Tom Peter. He reported from the Middle East and Afghanistan for 7 years, working mostly for the Christian Science Monitor. In 2012, he was kidnapped by gunmen in Syria, released later that day. But since then, he's looked at the diminishing opinion of journalists in the American public and decided that the job, and sometimes especially the high-risk job, just isn't worth it.
And we want to hear from you. Do you see that kind of diminished perception of integrity, of value of journalists in America? If so, why do you think that is? Do you believe that journalists are truthful in their reporting? Why don't more of us trust journalists today? And do you appreciate the work that war correspondents do? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We're talking now with Tom Peter. He reported from the Middle East for 7 years, mostly for the Christian Science Monitor. In 2012, he was kidnapped by gunmen in Syria, released later that day. But since then, he's looked at diminishing attitudes in America towards journalists and decided that the war zone jobs and, to some extent, the job of journalism just isn't worth it all the time.
We want to hear what you have to say. Do you respect the work of journalists? Do you feel more skeptical than you used to? Why do you feel like more people are questioning the integrity of journalists today, maybe than they used to? Call in at 800-642-1234. And do you worry about professional journalists, maybe like our guest, leaving the field, leaving what they're covering now, and maybe leaving an info vacuum in parts of the world? 800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org.
And we go to our callers now. Sally is first in Milwaukee. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. What do you think about this this changing attitude maybe toward journalism?
Very sad, actually, because I think it is an important part of our democracy. I think it is absolutely essential to have a democracy. We need a press that is free and, of course, held accountable. But I am a former journalist myself, and it was unbelievable how the feedback you would get after a story from liberals ranting at you saying it was too conservative and conservatives ranting saying it was too liberal. Usually that was an indication that you were doing something right, but it just, I think 90% of people who say that the media is biased, it's because it's coming from a filter in which they are biased themselves. It's very frustrating.
Sally, did you leave journalism because of reasons like Tom is talking about?
I think it was a factor, but that wasn't the only indication. I never did anything overseas. That's really impressive and just so important.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your thoughts. And Tom, what about the bias factor? That's something that comes up. You write about that. Is there anything to that? Are journalists more biased than they used to be?
I think one of the things I've encountered is that a lot of people seem to have trouble differentiating between, an objective news story versus a talk show. So, I've encountered a lot of people who will maybe, they'll watch like the O'Reilly Factor on Fox, or on the other side, maybe Rachel Maddow or something like that. And there seems to, it surprises me, but I think people seem to struggle and say, okay, they might know that O'Reilly or Maddow are, right or left of center, but they kind of just don't second check, or they don't second source, or they're not finding another source to see, okay, well, I've heard these facts, or I've heard someone talk about the news through a very polarized lens, but you need to actually go out and read or listen to or watch just the straight news reporting if you want to hear it how it is. I think a lot of people are critical of Fox in particular, or I guess MSNBC on the other side, but on both of those stations, if you look at just their straight news stories, not anything, not what the anchors are saying in commentary, not their talk shows, they you can understand what's happening, but people really seem to struggle with understanding maybe the difference between commentary and actual just news.
And you also talk about a study in your piece that seems to indicate that journalists are unbiased. Do you want to tell us about that?
There was a meta-analysis of political coverage over elections, which I think people tend to think of as maybe one of the more polarized times when the news can be reporting on things. And what the authors of the study found was that, you know, by and large, the press takes it right up the middle and is not, you know, slanted one way or the other. And yet, when you look at surveys of people's perception of the media, you know, Pew Research Center did one where they've been looking at attitudes towards the press since about 1985, and we are at record levels of mistrust of the media. So, you know, more people think that journalists are more immoral than they do moral, and you know, a majority are thinking that stories are inaccurate, and all those sorts of facts or perceptions that people have. And so, you know, it doesn't really make sense because, at least by all objective measures, the media is reporting things in a pretty straightforward manner, and yet the public has this idea that, you know, people like me are going into Syria and risking our lives because we want to support some sort of hidden political agenda, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
Let's go back to our phones now. Matt is next, and he's in Westfield. Hi, Matt.
Hello. I guess my comment is basically that I think people feel mistrust of the media when an event like Ferguson happens, and the media has very little facts to go on, and they speculate for days after the initial event. And then, you know, as the facts trickle out, it appears that they've speculated about quite a few things. And so basically, you know, they seem to have gotten quite a few things wrong. And so I think that creates a sense of distrust when the 24-hour news cycle breeds kind of this attitude of get the story first rather than get it right.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for articulating that, Matt. That has been a critique that we've seen lately, that people want to get there first and worry about the facts later. Is that something that you, the journalism profession, should be aware of and maybe take seriously, that critique?
I certainly think that critique is quite relevant if you're talking about the, you know, 24-hour news stations, where, you know, you have people coming on and, you know, they bring on guests and they'll talk about things that are developing and perhaps get things wrong sometimes. And, you know, I want to make clear that I'm not saying the media is infallible, but I also think that, you know, of course, sometimes when you report, people are going to make mistakes, but I think people are good about catching them, and I also don't think that those mistakes are unintentional. And I suppose I don't think that the mistakes are intentional. And I think maybe what your caller is saying, that maybe those mistakes are reckless sometimes. And I you know, sometimes maybe there are certain news programs on TV where they'll be a little overeager, but I don't think you can paint the media with a broad brush on that and say that, well, because I saw, you know, this or that TV station come out with facts before, or what they thought were facts before people really understood the situation, I don't think you can therefore conclude that all media is, you know, rushing to the presses just because it's so important to be the first to say something without fact checking, because that's just not true. You know, you can't, you know, if one attorney is, you know, is a terrible ambulance chaser or whatever you want to say, that doesn't mean that every attorney is like that. And you can't generalize about the profession. So, you know, it is a concern, and it is something people need to be aware of. And certainly with Twitter and 24-hour mm-hmm. news, it's an issue. But I don't think it's, you know, an overwhelming thing that has eroded or ruined the news industry's credibility.
And one thing I want to ask you before we let you go, I read some of the comments responding to your article, and there was a journalist or two there who said, you know, basically said to you, well, not everybody thinks journalists are hucksters. A lot of people do still trust and honor the job. So why not just write for them, write for those people, instead of quitting the high-risk reporting jobs? What do you say to that?
Well, I certainly would say that I'm not quitting my job. I think some people read it that way, but I still plan to do this. I'm not going to, you know, go farm maple syrup in Vermont or anything.
But at least, but, you know, the war reporting.
Yeah. I mean, but I might go back to war reporting as well. I don't have any immediate plans, but I would say, you know, in regards to that, there are people that do care, and I I do think that anyone who's a journalist, you know, you can write for those people who do care and value the profession. And certainly I heard back from a lot of people who do feel that way after this story came out. And I do think it is important to have create a public record and all the positive things that you think of when you think of journalism. So I'm not saying that, you know, because there's an increasing amount of partisan thinking that we should all just quit and go do something else. But I do think we should maybe think about it differently and maybe think about how, you know, as journalists, is there something that we can do? Is there a different way that we can communicate with people? So, you know, we get our point across without these allegations.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Tom Peter. He reported for the Middle East and Afghanistan for 7 years, mostly working for the Christian Science Monitor. We're talking about his recent piece in the New Republic.